Our friend, writer, critic, bon vivant, Colin Fleming joins us. Hello there, sir.
How are you today?
I'm well. How are you feeling? You stepped up your workout game the last few days, I saw.
I did. I have one day a year where I do 30 miles on foot, and that day came over the weekend, and I did my 5 monument climbs, and I ran today before the, well, floods hailing Noah seem to have started, and right now there's a gas leak in the building, and I am hiding out with nowhere to go in a little cave for shelter to do this. So here we are.
Wow, that's commitment, Colin. We appreciate that. Let's talk about your piece in the New York Daily News about Laura Ingalls versus the arrogance of moral superiority. Laura Ingalls Wilder being having her name taken off an award because of the way attitudes were a century ago.
Right. She is bad now, too. And it just becomes kind of a question of who's next? And I feel that people from the past who created great works of art or even just entertaining work, they sort of slip by, protected, as it were, on the back of people's ignorance. It's just because no one happens to take down a biography. I mean, if you read a biography, you read a biography of anyone, do people have any clue what has gone on in lives of the past, like Van Gogh and John Lennon and Charles Dickens, and even do it with all the women, too? I mean, every single person has things far more offensive than Laura Ingalls Wilder, who did not even have anything offensive. I think we have to look at the Little House books themselves and say that they're fiction, right? They're novels, but she's drawing on her own life. And that really is where the crux of the issue comes in for a lot of the people behind this movement today.
And her books were written back in the 1930s and 40s, right?
They were written then, and I guess if you really wanted to have an Ingalls Wilder controversy, you would want to base it around the notion of authorship. Did she write these books entirely on her own, for which she's given this 100% credit, or were there helping hands, that kind of thing. But basically, what this argument comes down to is the idea that the narrator of the book can be a third-person narrator, but we're talking Laura, of course, and had remarked somewhere in the pages that the only good Indian is a dead Indian. Now, we have to really separate this from the notion of espousing that. It's not like Laura Ingalls Wilder's tips for how to live your life as a racist savage. It's not that at all. It's simply the mood. It's the tone of the time. You can't leave that. Like, what are you supposed to do? It's what I would like people to answer. You're supposed to leave out the truth when you're creating these stories. You're supposed to leave out the setting. You're supposed to fudge it so that you can anticipate 100 years later people getting pissed off at you who have so many more issues with themselves than they do with actual art. Like, what would she, what's she supposed to do?
Well, and we've been through this before with Mark Twain and his work, people using contemporary standards to look at the writing of people from decades or a century or more ago. Where do you draw the line, and should there even be a line at all when it comes to retroactively looking at the morals of people?
No, because this isn't even about morals, and it's not even about the standards of our time, because our time right now, people use the word often erroneously fascist. I prefer the word Orwellian. What is going on right now is a kind of post-1984 that was far worse than anything that George Orwell drew up in his mind. This is crazy what's happening. If you really want to look at what fascism is, it's when you turn to someone who's been dead all of these years and you shame her by not being able to predict the future. And it's not only predict the future, but to account for our self-loathing that stops us from ever being able to view things like this. Not all of us, some of us, accurately. So she was supposed to just leave out these sort of observations of the time that are part of the setting, and what? I guess what really you might want to ask yourself is, was she allowed to write at all? Because if she was allowed to write, she would have had to write poorly. When you are distorting a setting in realistic work, you're not really situating readers within your story. So the option then for her was to either write poorly, like most of the MFAers right now, or to not write at all, to take away her voice. And that's okay. That's not fascist. That's not sexist. That's not classist. That's not incredibly disgusting. That's loathsome. That's as vile as you get as a thinker.
Well, and because if you're writing about earlier times, you are, in a sense, expressing a viewpoint, but that viewpoint is not yours as an author. It's the viewpoint of those characters who lived in that time.
Are you even expressing a viewpoint necessarily, though? If while I'm standing out here sheltered from the rain, someone comes past me and they say something horrible, and you say, oh, that sounded kind of interesting, Colin. What did that person say to you that was horrible? I said, well, my good friend, Rich, they said this. I'm not representing a viewpoint. I'm just telling you what's happening while I'm standing out here in the rain.
True.
Just life. That's just reality. And we don't do this. Like, we don't say that, well, you know what, Shakespeare, he really wanted you to get up to some regicide. And if you don't like your landlady, why, by all means, you should murder her. You should pull a Raskolnikov. We don't do that, but I think also we don't do that with those people simply because, one, their number has not come up. And, two, people aren't reading those works a lot. But everyone is reading still, not everyone, but a lot of people, their kids. I've asked a lot of parents since this all happened. They're reading Laura Ingalls Wilder, and no one is going out and saying, you know what, little Sally or Johnny, you're not going to be playing today with your Native American friend. Because kids don't think that. Kids are so much smarter than us in terms of having an open mind and a capacity for wonder. And some very dishonest, callow adults ruin it for other people.
Well, and I have to think it would be hard to go back to any works written, you could probably say, as recently as even the 70s and 80s that were reporting from that moment in that space and time that wouldn't have something in them that could somehow offend someone today.
What is happening today is far more offensive because it's taking away the liberty of our thought. And there is one thing that we've never really been able to infringe upon that's sacred, and that is the thoughts that go on in your head, the things you're able to enjoy and share with the people you care about and the people you love. To go after that, look, words are only a page deep. If you are that upset over a word that's reported in a fictionalized account, you need to start targeting yourself as the next person to go after. But I think about things, and I think about works that could elude kind of the grasp of these sorts of people, and it's like, what would it be? What are we going to have left? We can't even have Sesame Street left. People are offended by Bert and Ernie.
Because we would have things that were so tame and timid that they wouldn't be worth our time anyway.
And then our mind would just rot like so much nougat from the inside out. Like, what could you possibly... I mean, as I'm going through it in my head now, and these same people are singing along to A Hard Day's Night as they roll down the highway. I have news for you people. People change, but John Lennon hit women. He made Nazi salutes from balconies. He made fun of the handicapped at conscience. Was John Lennon a bad guy? No, he grew. Because we can be both bad for a while, we can make mistakes, we can be limited in our ken, our experience, our thinking, and we can grow. Because people who are smart are complex. And Laura Ingalls Wilder didn't even do a single thing, so far as we know, that you should actually be bothered by.
We're talking to Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Then there are those people in contemporary culture, and we'll stick to people who are still alive, but those people who have either done offensive, hurtful things or who are accused of those things, and obviously there's been a move on to not just not watch their work, but to try and almost eliminate it from the record. And I don't know, to me, that should be a personal choice. I would find it awkward and uncomfortable to go back and watch the old Bill Cosby shows, but I don't think we should expunge the record of their existence.
Charles Dickens did things that were pretty heinous, too. So that whole system, though, is predicated on ignorance. Was Dickens's sins towards his wife, were they on the level of Cosby? Like, I don't know. They're pretty bad. So if you know that, if you happen to have knowledge, then you're not at A Christmas Carol. And don't even get me started on museums, because you know what some of those people, hell, most of those people did. So you have to keep them separate. They're autonomous. Art comes to an artist from somewhere, something, whatever you want to call it, beyond themselves. And it goes through them, and I'm not saying it's God or anything like that, but art contains within it answers to mysteries that go beyond what a human should be able to know and evince, convey for others. And it's kind of this magical alchemy, this transcendent process, and you can just be someone who is doing whatever you're doing with your prostitute, if you're Van Gogh, or whatever it may be, and passing along your syphilis to people you don't want to tell it about. But you know what? They're separate. Otherwise, what you have to basically do is say, I am done with art. And art is not just something you read in books and see on a movie theater or experience in a museum. Art's a way of life. Art is the basis of friendship. It's vulnerability and courage and risking being open so that you can grow more. So if you're going to do that to these artists, you might as well pull back, and I think a lot of these people have, on living a life and merely exist and put the boulder over the front of your cave.
And we've done this before at various times in our history. I was just watching a documentary the other night on World War I and how during that time there was a move afoot in some portions of the country to stop playing and listening to music by German composers, which wiped out a fairly large chunk of classical music as we know it.
Oh, Wilhelm Furtwängler was like wiped out as a conductor for a while, and Wagner certainly had a difficult time in terms of being in the repertory, and it's the same kind of idea. But again, what these people aren't realizing is that it's based upon you not knowing anything. So if you don't know that Jimmy Page was basically a kidnapper of a mid-teen, so he has like kidnapping and like statutory rape and all sorts of things going on. If you don't know that, you're going to enjoy Stairway to Heaven. But what I'm saying is that you need to ferret the two apart from each other. They're not the same thing, or you're not going to have any art. You're not going to have any joy. And I think this is ratcheting up right now at a higher than ever level, because when people lack for meaning in their own lives, they need things to go after, like we've talked about before. That's always more preferable than not going after yourself, but looking at what you have going on. And so someone's number just happens to come up, and it could be any single artist ever. It could be, let's be honest about this, almost any single person ever, because we've all done things. And it's just the luck of the draw that allows you to be able to skate and have your film shown. That's so wrong. That's the death of society right there, if something like that continues.
I'm agreeing with you. Read Colin's newest piece in the New York Daily News at newyorkdailynews.com. We just got a message from a listener who said you might be their favorite guest of all time. You are dead on. Well, there you go.
Is that Noah in his ark? Because I'm about to start a sailing here, my friend.
Well, good luck with that, and good luck with the gas leak, too. That sounds more concerning to me than the meteorological conditions.
Yeah, I have my own Raskolnikov thing going on, sort of with the dodgy. I'll be honest with you. I'm sort of hiding out from the building because I don't want the gas people to come into my apartment and see how I live and shame me and just be like, wow, this guy's so poor, but there are a lot of books here. This is awful, and have a story for their fellow gas workers. So I'm hoping the problem will just resolve itself if I ignore it and hang out in this alley for a while.
Well, and you know what they would do? They would walk in, they would look around, they would pull out a tissue, wipe their nose on it, and then set it down on your kitchen table.
Luxuries like table? I don't think you know how I live, dude. It's not like that. Tables. When you say that, I'm thinking like, oh, there's Mr. Kimball out in the Hamptons.
All right, on the pile of books that you use as a table.
Yeah, if you stuff it inside one of the coffee cups, sure, that'll work.
Perfect. There you go. It's the Spartan Life of Colin Fleming, Tuesdays here on Downtown. Always a pleasure, my friend. We'll do it again next week.
All right, sounds good. Take care.